All right, live from Lower BCC for the first time in 2022. This is Red Sea Radio. We're back again with another episode after a long, long pause on WVOF 88.5 FM. I'm your host, Kyle Majors, along with Jack Sarasulo. Jack, it's been a long time. How are we feeling?
It's nice to be back in the studio.
Yeah, it's very nice to be back in the studio. And not just that, but we haven't done a show in...
Yeah, show in general.
Like a month, pretty much. Over a month, actually.
It was our break too, you know.
Yeah, they had a COVID pause. We had our own little pause, for a few weeks. So, yeah, we're back. We're excited, but we have a lot to cover today. So, from a step back perspective, right?
Let's zoom out.
Zoom out a little bit. The Stags are 9-10. They're 7th in the MAC today. There's been a lot of games that we haven't covered yet and a lot of losses that we haven't covered yet.
Yeah, I think our winning coincides with us being on...
On air?
Yeah.
So when we're on air, we're winning, and when we're off air, we're losing. And we're back on air, and we did win our last game, so it could be correlated. But let's take a step back now. I guess going through this show, we're not going to go through every detail like we usually do because there's so many games that we haven't talked about. But... overall, just kind of glossing over the older games and then kind of talking about their more recent form. Marist, so not this past Marist game, but Marist on January 7th was their first game of the new year and the first game after our last show that we didn't get to cover. So they wound up losing 60-51. And this was obviously after our COVID pause, but also after or during while Marist didn't have, you know, some of their top players as well. So, you know, going into it, I was pretty confident that we were going to beat Marist. Marist has always been one of those teams that doesn't really scare me in the MAC.
We do relatively well against them, even at our worst.
And we've split against them in the past, and obviously this year again. And, you know, we've had some exciting games against them in the past, overtime games, you know, a couple of years ago and stuff like that. But I was not expecting to get pretty much embarrassed.
Yeah.
Because at this point... The score was whatever 60-52.
It was a lot worse than the score. The game was a lot worse than the score indicates.
Yeah, we lost. We were losing by a lot more than 9 points.
56-37 with 6 minutes left.
Yeah. So again, the score line at the end does not reflect how bad we played. They got embarrassed on our home court, and it was just a very poor game. And I know we didn't have Mido, right? But I don't really think that is an excuse for how poorly they played.
It's an excuse for some teams that we play against, but definitely not Marist.
Yeah, so that was like a very disappointing start to the new year. And you had to hope that maybe it was, you know, coming off COVID, coming off the pause, maybe they weren't, you know, fit enough, you know, to play well that game and you put it behind you. But then we go on and lose to Siena. 2 days later, that one was a little bit closer, but again...
another game that would have been nice to have.
Yeah, Siena's obviously not the power they've been in the past either, so it was definitely a game that I thought we should have won. Especially if we want to be that team that, before this really poor stretch, we were still, like, you know, I know we only played 2 games, but we were top 3 in the MAC.
Yeah.
And from a fan perspective, we were hoping that that was actually the outlook of our season, like, us being top... maybe not top 3, but maybe top 4 or 5.
Being in the upper half of the conference.
Yeah, and we had some obviously convincing losses against, you know, big schools, and then we had some nice wins against the 2 MAC teams that we had played so far. So just judging off of that, we had thought, all right, we probably are in the top, you know, 3-4 teams before this stretch. Then you lose to Marist, it's like, all right, coming off COVID, whatever. Then you lose to Siena, and it's like, all right, we should be beating these teams. Yeah. If we want to be in that top, you know, range. Then you go on Tuesday, January 11th versus Iona. So this is a big one, rescheduled game from the COVID pause. And we could talk a little bit about this game because obviously, first of all, it's just a huge game. First of all, the two teams that played in the championship last year going up against each other is always going to be a big game. But even more so... Rick Pitino, Iona, a team that's
Fairfield,
beaten ranked teams, and is also undefeated in the MAC. So they're playing on your court, and it's a huge opportunity for us to first of all, hand them their first MAC loss, and second of all, have a statement win for ourselves and help ourselves in the MAC rankings. But 80-76, wound up losing. During that second half, it just started to feel like one of those games we were bound to lose.
Yeah, you got to a point, you hit that turning point where I only got a couple baskets in a row, and obviously Fayetteville's had trouble closing out games, which has kind of been a running theme of this whole stretch. And like, you got to that point with like 2 or 3 minutes left where they were winning Fairfield, and like most fans would be looking at that game and be like...
Felt like we were losing.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's funny, we were somewhat declared a second-half team right before this stretch, but during this stretch, we've been very, very poor in the second half. This game, I feel like we played somewhat poor against Monmouth in the second half.
Yeah, the first half, I mean, first if you put our first half against Monmouth or our first half against Iona, like, if you put that elongated over full games, we would have beaten both of them by probably... Iona we would have beaten by...
3 points. Well, yeah. Oh, well...
I mean, I'm not exactly that, but I meant if we played the same way, it still would have been close, obviously, but
yeah,
we definitely would have won both those games.
It's not just, like, the whole second half that's been our issue, but we've either had, a long stretch without scoring, which, I mean, we've done that for years now, but, like, a long stretch without scoring in the second half that allows the team to totally come back, which happened in Iona. I think it also happened in Monmouth, and I think it also happened one or two other times during the stretch. Or we just can't finish at the end.
Yeah, the final 2 minutes is like our kryptonite. I mean, the Iona game specifically, I remember, I think was Fairfield up 3, I think, at one point. They turned the ball over at mid-court, like bringing the ball up.
Yeah, I think Taj had a chance to ice it with a layup towards the end and then wound up turning the ball over. They go down, score.
Yeah, like, those kind of things, it's like those last possessions, like they're all so crucial that like a silly turnover, like you have to have like take good shots on those possessions or like score on those possessions, and they just can't seem to do that.
Yeah, like you said too, it's frustrating because it's usually silly mistakes, right? Like you have the chance to hit a layup to ice the game, or it's not as simple as just like, oh, they went down and they were missing shots. It's like they're coming up with these silly mistakes. And I know like some of the people will put, for the Iona game at least, some people will put that blame on like Patino having the intimidation factor, and
I mean they do it against
Moffitt. All these good players.
They do it against
these
other teams too, so it's not like the game we were both at, like the final shot they got, not the betting layup, but the three at the end after the free throws. I mean, like how many times have we seen the final shot turn into like
heave? All season.
Yeah, I know. Like, and every close game we've had, the final shot has turned into some.
It's either been
heave or like contested,
or no shot,
or no shot at all. Yeah,
yeah.
It happened in the UMass game as well.
It's been happening. I mean, you even go back to last year with Caleb. You know,
yeah. Oh,
driving in down three, but like even this year, it's happened.
UMass. I mean, UMass. Honestly, UMass probably the best final play they've drawn up. I mean, that was like not a great shot, but that, I mean, a mid-range two from Wojcik is better than.
Yeah, and then
a
half-court
shot from...
You had Iona, our last, you know, play got blocked.
Yeah.
And then you had Monmouth where, you know...
Turned into
like
broken play.
A extremely deep three that, I mean, Cruz, he has hit a couple of those during this stretch, but you don't want that to be your last shot.
And it was not like Cruz's fault. He just ended up with the ball with 1 second left.
Yeah, it just felt like there was no, like, real plan in place. They just kind of dribbled it around.
And I think it's just like... especially when they need three rather than two, like everyone knows the play is going to Wojcik, so it's like
yeah,
Iona and Monmouth were able to like overcommit, and you could tell because the play got blown up so quickly against Monmouth.
Yeah, and we could keep talking about Iona, but just in general, for these types of plays we're talking about for end of game down three, I've been surprised that, and I know he hasn't played necessarily well, but I've been kind of surprised that TJ hasn't even been in on those plays.
Yeah, I mean he's not really. He hasn't really been, like, closing lineup consistently as much.
Mm-hmm. Like, but even just, I'm just saying, like, last shot, you know, because I know he hasn't been playing well. He hasn't been shooting nearly as well during this stretch. But just in those situations, like Monmouth, for example, or even Iona, just to have him on the court as, like, a...
decoy, just someone that has gravity.
Or just an extra option that can shoot the three, because Like Cruz, for example, gets stuck, you know, maybe TJ is open somewhere and he could dish it off to him. Or Jake gets blocked against Iona. Well, maybe he felt that pressure and maybe TJ was, you know, right to his right and he could kick it over to him. But with him off the court, you know, you don't really have that many options that can really shoot the three where you're confident in it, you know. Cruz, he's been getting better, but you're still not really confident in his three for the end of the game, the tie game. Taj, it's kind of hit or miss depending on how he's playing that day. He shot it well against Marist, but there's also games where he doesn't shoot the three well. So, like, and Chrysler is, again, you know, on-off threes, kind of like he's either feeling it that day or he's not. So, like, for a last play like that, not that TJ has to be in, like, for the entire last, like, stretch of the game, but for a last play where you need a three, you know, why not just have him in there as, like, an extra option that maybe he gets forgotten about and, you know, maybe you could dish it to him as a last option. I don't know. I just feel like it had to be better than what we put forward in that last stretch.
I think this past Marist game was like the first time they hit a shot like with the shot clock turned off. That Cruz shot, like, it still wasn't even a good shot. It just happened to go in. But
yeah.
That shot to make it 69-66 was like the first time I've seen them actually execute with like the very end of the game.
Yeah, it's interesting because I didn't love that shot either. Watching it live, I was like, oh, come on. And then it goes in. But, I mean, those are the type of shots he hits, too,
yeah, so
which
it's
is
like,
crazy.
I mean, there's no blame if it goes in. There's not.
Yeah.
No one gets mad if it goes in.
That's so. Very high risk, though. The shots he takes are very high risk because high risk, high reward, because if he misses that, then we're on here complaining that he took a shot that wasn't necessarily the best shot. He makes it. He's the hero. So, I mean, those are just the type of shots he hits. But kind of saying, going back to what you kind of just said, it feels like we never come out on the good side of those situations.
Yeah.
So for Marist, it was like the first time in, I don't know how long, maybe since the MAC tournament, I guess we did come out in some good situations, like against Manhattan in close games, stuff like that. But usually it feels like we always come up short in those situations.
Yeah,
we did against Iona, against Monmouth.
If they're either up three or down three Fairfield with less than 2 minutes left, they're most likely going to end up losing.
Yeah. My confidence is shot when it gets to that point. Like, even against Monmouth, I was sitting there at the table, and I was, like, working. I couldn't really, like, be...
locked in.
No, I couldn't really be, like, energetic.
Oh, yeah,
I couldn't really cheer, you know what I mean?
Because
I was, like, working. But when they... I think it was when their center had that and-one dunk.
Oh, yeah.
I knew it was over there. And there was still, like, a bunch of plays left after that. But, like, I just knew it was over.
There were a couple, like, Pappas kind of didn't have, like, the best first half.
He made
a couple shots, but, like, it was when, like, towards the end of the second half, he started getting a couple assists and getting his teammates involved. And I was like, yeah, if he starts, like, because they were obviously focusing on him most of the game. And, like, when he started being able to find his teammates out of, like, double teams and stuff, I was like.
That was, like, his biggest contribution, I'd say. Is, like, almost using himself as a decoy or finding assists, different stuff like that. Because just him offensively, he played good, but he didn't play, like next-level good.
No,
I don't know. Like, he was, like...
He had a couple shots early that were pretty good, but then he kind of slowed down for most of the...
Like, him and Wojcik, for the most part, were pretty even on stats.
Yeah, I would say...
For most of the game. But I think, like, his best contribution towards the end of the game was, you know, finding his teammates or putting himself in positions that opened up other... areas of the floor to score.
Yeah, I mean, that big started playing pretty well down the stretch. I'm forgetting his name. I'm going to look for the... But he was the transfer from... they said he was from an ACC school, I think, actually.
Really?
Miller. Mm. Yeah, so when that guy started getting involved, because he was huge.
Yeah.
And he finally started to get into his
I mean,
roof.
Their team was big.
Yeah.
In general. That still was a very, very winnable game. It was frustrating. They definitely came into that game very, very hungry to beat us because of what we did in the MAC tournament last year to them. You know, you could just see it, how much it meant to them. Pappas, obviously, at the end of the game, was, like, dancing on our logo or whatever. And
I was gone by then. I couldn't take it.
I was frustrated, but I was working, so I couldn't. I had to wait till I left to, you know, rifle off a tweet that, you know, it meant so much to him because... We ended his season last year, and we forced him to take another year at school.
For him to go back to school so he could
He's in classes right now probably because of us. That's probably why he was frustrated, and that's probably why he danced on our logo after the game. But, you know, leave it to him to, you know, dance on the logo of a team that's in ninth place after a game, acting like it's a huge win for him when he's got bigger fish to fry.
Yeah,
so
Walker Miller, the big man for Monmouth, was actually played at UNC for two years.
Oh, okay. That was the UNC transfer.
Maybe, actually.
I know we talked about that at the beginning of this year.
But, yeah, I mean, I even see his averages. He averages 15 and 6. Like, that's elite big man numbers for
Yeah, I mean, they're a good team. They should have beat Iona last week, or was it the week before, whatever. But
yeah, with the overtime. I mean,
yeah, and not only did it go to overtime, but they really should have won. They kind of gave the game away to Iona. It was right in that stretch where, I mean, we should have beat Iona too, and we gave them the game away. So maybe there is something to say about the intimidation factor of Iona. But back to the Iona game, so we can kind of close that out. One of the things I'm concerned with is, like, you know, last year we played Iona and they killed us, and then we beat them in the second night. And it came from really good games from, like, Mido, you know, different guys that don't necessarily always consistently give those numbers. This year, you know, we lose by 4, and, you know, Jake had 24 points. He had 8 threes. I really think this was our game to beat them if we're going to beat them this year in the regular season, because, you know, if we're being realistic, Jake's probably not going to have 8 threes the next time we play them. Like, that's a very, even for him, that's a very outlier kind of number to have 8 threes in a game. So, you know, next time we play them, and we're playing them at their place.
I will say this. I mean, having Mido back, if there's one matchup that would help having Mido back, it would probably be Iona.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could tell it, like, Cook got the foul trouble early in the second half and kind of forced Chrysler to play the 5. And, I mean, just look at Nelly Jr. Joseph's numbers from that game, and you can see kind of...
Yeah, 20 points.
14 rebounds.
14 rebounds.
Like, I mean, I don't know the exact numbers, but I have to imagine a majority of that happened while Chrysler was in at the 5. So I can't imagine Mido. I can't imagine Mido would be a mix of Mido and Cook would give him 20 and 15 again.
Yeah, that's a good point too, because as much as, like, I really don't think Jake will put on the same performance, I don't think their bigs will put on the same performance either, because a lot of them beating us was just them being bigger than us.
I mean, Van Eyck had a good game as well.
Yeah, but I mean, he's another, like, big guy too. It's a lot of them beating us was just them being bigger than us. They didn't really shoot the ball well.
No, Jolly,
outside.
Jolly was not good.
Yeah, he wasn't. You know, any of those guys who, I think, even said Pitino had to tell one of their players to stop shooting threes, because anybody who's usually an outside shooter on that team, they didn't shoot well against us at all. I don't know if I've seen some Iona people tweet that they've kind of been on that type of stretch. So I don't know if it was necessarily our defense or just that's how they were playing. They were in a slump. But a lot of their points were just points in the paint and kind of easy baskets, really just because they were bigger than us, which also kind of left me sour after the game, because I just felt like they didn't really play, like, a lot better than us. They just felt like they were bigger than us.
Yeah.
We just couldn't get the rebounds, and they were just, you know, easy put-back points, or, you know. I don't know. It made me feel like,
man, that's
this
college,
team wasn't, like, outright better than us,
that's,
you know.
College basketball with a legendary head coach in a mid-major conference is just like he's going to have just like a better team.
Yeah, and I just feel like height was definitely like the product of why we lost, and it just, I guess it feels helpless to give up all those points in the paint when you're a fan. Obviously, there's nothing we could do about it.
Like every other team, you can be like every other team in the MAC, you'd be like, okay, like
yeah, like they shot better than us. They had this player who, you know,
just
went
had a really
off
good
whatever,
game.
But to just lose on a lot of just points in the paint.
Like, this kind of thing we talk about is something we usually reserve for, like, playing Providence at the beginning of the year every year. It's like, oh, they're just bigger than us, better
Watson.
Players. Yeah, it's like, can't really do much about it. But when it's in your own conference and you know that's the only way you'll get to the tournament is through, like, beating this team, it's like...
It's tough.
Yeah.
And that's why I say, like, Jake had a phenomenal game, one of his best games of the season. And first of all, you know, Pitino's gonna very much implement that into the next game plan the next time they play, is that they stop him. And just in general, even if they didn't tighten up their security on him, he's probably not going to shoot eight threes again in that game. You know,
just, even if he gets his shots, I don't think he's going to shoot at a 60% clip like he did this game.
So, I mean, you take out his points, he scored a third of our points. And obviously he's still going to score the next time we play them, but he's not going to score that much for the most part, most likely. I hope he does. But
we don't even know if we'll have Caleb back for that game, so it'll be even less production to help him help Wojcik. So it's like, it is tough. You know, you said it was their best shot.
I think it was their best chance
until,
to beat them.
Until if we ever play them in
the tournament.
AC.
That, I think that was the most frustrating. And being up, what, 12? What were we up, 12
or
14?
10 with 7 minutes left or something like that.
I was at home watching the game, and I started thinking about
10 with 8 minutes left.
How many possessions could possibly be left, and how many possessions...
Yeah, that's what you got
to... How many possessions do we need to just go through the motions and hopefully weather the storm and you know, shut them out of coming back? It felt possible. I think in, like, a two-minute stretch, we pretty much blew the entire lead, right?
Yeah, I know. They scored, like... They went, like, an 8-0 run in, like, a minute. They had that alley-oop dunk. I forget what they cut it to, but, like, I think that was when I noticed it was over. When they just threw up this, like, absurd alley-oop dunk with, like, down six in, like, a 3 minutes. It's like they're showing off, like, and it's like they're in, like,
they already
crunch.
Feel like they're winning almost. Yeah, the way they're celebrating, like, and stuff. And they didn't even shoot well from the line.
They shot horribly from three and from the line.
That was another thing I was noticing, too, is 58% from the line. They didn't really shoot well. They got a lot of free throws, obviously,
because
of the way the play was going. But, yeah, Van Eyck did not shoot well from the line either, and he's quick to complain all the time. I know we were getting upset watching him. He's every single play, every time a foul, every time a whistle's blown, he's always got his hands up complaining to the ref. And, you know, he should be spending time working on his free throws instead, because he didn't really shoot well from the line. But it was just frustrating because we always have those runs, like you said, two-minute stretch where we completely blow the lead and can't even, like, weather the storm. You know, if we were scoring every other possession or so, or at least putting something on the board, it would have weathered the storm for a few minutes, but...
Yeah, this is where, like, the last year's, like, Jalen's, like, rock fight mentality kind of would help in these situations. It's like, just, like, literally, like, just chew up as much clock as possible.
Yeah.
Don't even worry about, like, just, like, minimize possessions towards the end. Which I guess he kind of does right now. Obviously, most teams do that, but... Or, I don't know. It seemed like last year we were almost better in, like, end-of-game scenarios, even though we had, like, a worse
team. It's the same team, but...
Same team, but I guess I feel like...
playing worse.
Players have become better. Cook wasn't the same player he is this year. Obviously, Woj, it's kind of...
More comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, Jake, at the end of that game, he didn't really... They did a good job of covering him. He didn't really have many attempts during the end of that game. Obviously, the last shot... He had an attempt, but...
I didn't even mind the play on that. It was the right idea, just not...
They just made a good
right
play
execution, yeah.
Defensively, but a long stretch, pretty much the whole time while Iona was coming back, Jake didn't really have many shots at all. And partially, you know, they did a good job of covering him, but I would have liked to see him even force some shots up at that point, because...
Yeah, just take
something. It's not... The offense isn't coming from anyone else. You know, we're on a... You know, they're on an 8-0 run or whatever. I would have liked to see him get the ball, you know, at the top of the key and maybe try to force something, because...
He shows he can hit it from deep, so, like, you just need that second of space.
We just needed anything. Any, you know, points to just combat their run, and this is what always kills us, is those stretches of time. And, you know, we could look more at Monmouth now, who, again, we had a similar stretch where we just didn't score for a long time, and allowed them to creep back in the game. And once that game becomes close, that's when it's like, all right, we're going to lose. We're probably going to lose. As a fan, that's kind of what we're saying. You know, once it's like a 4-point game or whatever, you got start getting nervous, and you know that we're probably going to lose, because once it's close and it's a battle at the end, it feels like we have to be so perfect to win those games. And obviously, most of the time, we're not. So, Monmouth, Fairfield, this was, what, last Thursday?
This is last Thursday, yeah.
First game back at Webster Bank Arena for us. It's been a while. Mm-hmm. You guys were doing a good job.
Yeah, we were igniting a fan section.
Yeah, you guys had a little crowd going back there. It was good. You're right behind the bench. You were getting the bench rowdy, right, with you. Mm-hmm. So, and you guys were the lucky row of the game.
Yeah, we were the lucky row, so we get hockey tickets.
Yeah, so.
Back at Bridgeport this weekend.
You guys, is that this weekend?
Yeah.
Are you going?
Sunday, yeah.
So, you guys had, are you going to miss the NFL?
No, well, I don't know what time it's at, actually. We'll probably be back for the night game. I was talking about a night game. It's like 6 o'clock.
Yeah, isn't it 3 and 6?
Yeah.
Anyway, you guys were the lucky row, so congratulations.
We'll still be going, don't worry.
But, you know, you guys were loud, and there was a lot of students there in general.
They were lit. It was like that section was kind of our, but then it was like a lot, like littered around, like kind of.
Yeah. That's the issue, and we have a Stags in the Stands meeting tonight, but to try to get those students to be more together, like if everyone was in the same section, it would actually be a decent amount of people. It wouldn't be, like, insane, but it would be a decent amount of people for compared to what we've had in the past few years. So we'll try to figure that out, but I thought the crowd was pretty good, especially during the end of the game. It was very loud during the end of the game, and I thought when the crowd was being loud, I thought maybe that would help push us over, but didn't quite. So we lost 61-58. Obviously had that chance to tie it at the end of the game, regulation. Jesus Cruz came up short, but looking at the game leaders,
we actually might be back for the games. It's 1 p.m.
Isn't it two games?
I think 30th, it's just the winner.
Oh.
The winner of the first round matchups play. Actually, well, it might be two. I don't know. But, yeah.
You're welcome for that.
No, it is two games. It is two games. Never mind.
But anyway, Pappas, yeah, he went 6 for 12 from the field, 16 points. Wojcik for us, 15 points, 5 of 12 from the field. So, you know, they were pretty similar stats-wise, which is why I felt good in the first half because he wasn't playing super well, Pappas.
No. He early, like, first, like, few possessions, I think he had, like a three in, like, the first possession, like, a deep three, and I kind of, like...
Yeah, I don't even think it touched net, too. Yeah, I think it was, straight in. I remember that three. I was like, wow. Because I've never even seen him play in person, I don't think. Or I have, like, a couple years ago, but I don't remember him as much. I think the last time I seen them play in person was the Allen Jean Rose game winner.
Oh yeah, like 2 years ago.
So I don't even remember back then. We weren't even as like we didn't have the show or anything. So, but yeah, for us, one of the things I think we forgot or I wanted to mention is that you know our bigs haven't been playing as well during this stretch. You know, Supreme had 4 points in this game. Specifically in this game, they didn't play as well, and obviously Monmouth is a big team, so that. You know, it was part of the reason why, but, you know, Supreme, 1 for 3 from the field, 4 points, 6 rebounds. He didn't really even seem as aggressive as he's been, you know, or at least attempting to try to get some shots up.
And, I mean, if Favors going to beat Monmouth and Iona, like, they're two, like, they have two of the best bigs in the conference. So it's like, that's where it's going to be won or lost. Like, We shoot favorite shoots perfectly from three against Iona, blah, blah, blah. They shoot horribly from three, and they still win because their big man gets 20 and 15. Like, Supreme has to kind of match that energy and that output if they have a chance to win.
And that's back to saying, like, we have to be perfect in these games or even in these late-stretch scenarios where it's like a four-point game. It's like we have to be near perfect, and these teams don't even have to be because they're out-rebounding us. They're getting second chances, you know, and for us it's like, every time we have a possession, it feels like we have to score, otherwise we're about to blow it, you know, for ourselves. So even in this past, what was it, the Marist game, I want to pull up the stats for this one to see, because I think they played better. Yeah, so Supreme had 13. He went 3-for-4 from the field. But another player I wanted to talk about, I wanted to make sure I could get the stats up, is Allen, who also hasn't had a good stretch. You know, he had that earlier stretch in the season where he broke himself into the starting lineup and even led us in scoring a few times, dropped 20. But recently, I feel like he's another guy who hasn't been aggressive at all. We saw a lot of, you know, pump fakes from the three-point line, leads into drive, leads into a Euro step, to a nice finish, some aggressive dunks, like some energetic plays from him. We really haven't seen that from him in a number of games. I can't even really recall the last time he played like that.
The last big game from Allen.
He had 3 against Monmouth, and he had 4 against Marist. And Marist, I think, would have been a game where he could have performed like that. It would have made sense against Monmouth. They were pretty tight in the paint.
Yeah, so
defensively, but you know, for a game like Marist, I feel like he could have, you know, played like how he played, you know, a month and a half ago.
And it's interesting because that kind of lack of consistency from like Cruz, Allen, that kind of area, it kind of has led to Mido and Cook lineups together, which I think we've kind of agreed to, like, not love.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of just looking for production. I think they ran it a few times against Monmouth. They had a couple
times. Started it.
They started it against Marist, but they used it off the, like, later on in the game against Monmouth.
Yeah. Well, they started both of them against Monmouth, too.
Did they?
Yeah, but part of that is because Caleb's,
they did.
Caleb's out, so.
That's true. But it's just, like, I don't know. They're trying to overcome, like, this lack of kind of production. And they're trying to, I don't know if that's the best option. I mean, obviously, I know you're a big TJ fan. I would even rather.
Well, I mean, if we're being honest, he hasn't played well recently. But I think you just see, like, the potential. And, like, I know he has that ability to score. And when we're not scoring, to me, it just feels like, why not at least try him in those situations? But I'm not like advocating that he should get like a ton more minutes, because he hasn't been shooting well.
It's just between Caleb being out and Chris or not being like kind of that guy. But I think it's just like Mido and Cook kind of just putting two guys on the court to do like the same exact thing.
Yeah.
So it just kind of like
it almost clogs.
I don't know if it meshes well. Not to say that it's either their fault. It's just that they're kind of the same player in terms of style.
Yeah, but there's just, like you said, there's not really any, with Caleb hurt now, it's like, who else?
It's like, you could try Cruz at the 4, or 3, I guess, or yeah, Allen, Cruz, Cook in the front court, or just bring back Chrysler to play Mido's spot like they did earlier in the year. I don't know.
Yeah, either of those honestly wouldn't be a bad. And we've seen both of those variations.
Yeah, we've seen it before.
In previous years.
Yeah, and I mean, Chrysler has always been kind of a nice, like, appetizer.
Like, to start the game off? Yeah, like, complimentary to Cook, instead of having both of, you know, Mido and Cook in there at the same time. Mm-hmm. So, and Cruz, we have to mention, Cruz has played better during this stretch. He's played well.
I think Cruz has hit, like, a baseline where, like, he's never going to be too high, never too low at this point. Like, he used to be fluctuated day to day, like, when you see Cruz, which one you get. But I think this year it's kind of nice to have that veteran, just guy that will give you 10 every night.
Yeah, and he's playing well on both sides of the ball. Obviously, you know, he scored the last 4 points against Marist. So, yeah, he's played really well. Nothing to really criticize him for. Even like you mentioned, the final shot against Monmouth, it's not really his fault. But I wouldn't mind seeing him back in the starting lineup. I just don't know if it would change the way he plays.
Yeah.
Because last year we saw him in the starting lineup and it was different.
Yeah, basketball's weird like that, like based on who you're playing with and all that. Like it just completely changes. Could completely change your output, but I mean, why not try it? I would prefer it over Cook and Mido playing together.
Yeah, but like you said, or like we've said in so many shows before this, is that Cruz is going to be on the court at the end of the game anyway, so yeah. It doesn't really matter if he starts or not.
No, yeah, I get it, but it's just like minimizing the minutes of Cook and Mayo together. Also, it also could lead to more foul trouble for the both of them, having them on the court at the same time, and then yeah. You have to rest both of them at the same time. Like, they should be attempting to have Cook or Mayo on the court at one, always at one time.
Yeah, I feel like their chemistry didn't really work well in the Marist game, too, at certain points. Like, right in the beginning of the game, Cook had, he got the ball, and he had the chance to dish it right over to Mayo, who was wide open. I think he was double-covered. Or he had the chance to go up with it, but then he went down with it, and I think he either, like, dribbled off his foot or he traveled or something. It just felt like their styles were, it's just a little... I mean, you don't really usually see teams play, like...
Two bigs like that.
Two, especially, like, seven-foot guys together.
Especially just, like, yeah. Especially two that don't shoot really at all. Have zero, like, three-point shot. It's different if you have, like, a Chrysler there. I don't know. He's not 7 foot, obviously, but a guy like Chrysler who can step out behind a three-point line, it's not really that big of a deal. But when you have two kind of towers in the paint at all times, it's kind of tough.
Yeah. Overall... To close out the Monmouth, I know we've jumped around a lot this episode just because we've had a lot to talk about. And if we went through every game, like, statistics-wise, we would have been here for, like, 4 hours. But Monmouth game, I thought it was very winnable. But I don't know. Part of me feels like they just wanted it more than us. Could tell that it meant a lot to them. Obviously, to Pappas for what he was, you know, doing post-game and stuff. And even Rice, right, their head coach. I was working right by him, so I could hear him talking all game. And, you know, he's actually a very nice guy. He was, you know, honest. So you guys whooped us last year. You know, like, straight up, you know, you guys just whooped us last year. But you could tell how much he wanted to win this game. His assistant coaches, like, everyone that was sitting right next to, they were so intense the whole game. And it didn't feel like a regular, just, like, mid-season MAC game against, you know, a team that's in the top two or three and a team that's currently in ninth or whatever. It felt a lot more. It felt like it meant a lot more to them. So part of me, I feel like, and even their bench was, like, you know, chanting the whole game and everything. They felt a lot more into it than we did. And I still think it was a very, very winnable game for us. And if we were even able to take Iona or Monmouth, one of those two,
it'd be huge.
That would have been a huge statement win for us.
We'd be 4-4 going 4-4 in conference,
and just the confidence to know that you could do that against those teams.
And I mean, I guess a silver,
and we still can.
Yeah, a silver lining at all of this is that we haven't really gotten the doors blown off us really in conference yet.
Aside from that first Marist game.
Yeah, but, like, I mean, it ended up being a 9-point game. I guess it's really the doors blown off us. But I mean, every conference game has been less than 10 points. So it's not like we're. Especially in Iona Monmouth games, like, those were, like, 20-point losses instead of, like, 5-point losses or 3-point losses. Like, I feel like our thought processes behind this would be a lot different.
And I will say, after losing to Marist and Siena, and not just after losing them, but after the way we played against those teams, I thought that we were going to get killed by Iona.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be ugly. And they had just played well. They just played well against, who was it, St. Louis, right, or something? They've been playing well all season. They were playing well. Yeah, they just lost to St. Louis by 1 point before they played us. At St. Louis, I think. So, they had just played a good school and pretty much, you know, almost beat them. And we had just played two schools that we should beat and lost to both of them. And it wasn't really that close. So, I thought we were going to get killed. So, just to... I mean, I guess we kind of had this conversation against, like, Providence and DC, yeah, where we were, like, upset we didn't beat them, even though going into it we thought we were going to get killed.
But Iona and Monmouth are a lot more realistic than us.
Yeah, yeah,
even,
of course.
Even how good they are, it's a lot more realistic.
Yeah, it's like the same scenario, but it's just in conference, which makes it, you know, a lot more realistic. But I guess for us, I guess, I mean, not to be too selfish.
We were similarly, like, sized underdogs against Iona and Providence.
Yeah.
So.
But I guess not to be, like, too selfish, because we did think we were going to get killed, and then we got really good close games. And the Monmouth game was a lot of fun, too, to, like, be there and watch it and stuff. It was a really good game.
Very entertaining game.
Yeah, it was really entertaining. But to be, I don't know, to think we're going to get killed and then lose marginally, I think you've said it earlier this year, it's like it almost hurts more to lose by like that close margin sometimes because also, it feels like we should have won.
And like it's just so crazy how much like flipping one of these, like even if we lost both Tyone and Monmouth, if we were like flip like the Quinnipiac game, the Siena game, like how much more confident I feel like we would be in our chances being 4-4 rather than 3-5.
Yeah, and the MAC is so close right now, and it always is. So, I mean, right now, what are we?
3-5.
Seventh?
Seventh, 3-5. And, I mean, if we flip
one. Seventh, eighth, and ninth, are all, and tenth are all the same amount of wins, so.
If we flip, I'm saying, like, if we were to flip, like, any of these one basket games that we had in the past two, like, week and a half, you're thinking about looking at a team that's tied for ninth to a team that's in the upper half of the conference.
Yeah. And so that's just how the league goes.
It's all, like, relative. It's all, like...
And that's also just how Fairfield plays. Like, we don't really get killed, like you said. We don't really get blown out. So a lot of our losses are tough to swallow because they're usually close losses. You know, and we lose, what, five games in conference, and majority of our losses are close. We're going to feel, like, really upset that we couldn't have taken at least, you know, three of them or something like that.
It also shows that, I mean, all it takes is, like, another week like we had earlier in the year, or another 2 weeks like we had earlier in the year, and we could be back where we were before conference opened up, before conference play even opened up.
Yeah, and I think we knew going into it that like the Ionas and Monmouth type of schools were, you know, we weren't going to finish ahead of those.
No, but we set upper half of the conference.
That yeah, no, I'm saying like we obviously weren't going to finish ahead of those. Like those are kind of some of the more. And it's still not that out of the water, but those are some of the more, like, uncatchable schools right now. Obviously, no one's going to, like, beat Iona for first place. And just in regular season standings, I'm just talking about. And, like, St. Peter's is up there. You know, we're not going to pass those teams, obviously, but we still are, like, very, very much in it to, you know, finish in that upper half.
There's definitely, like, I feel like there's, like, a tier below Fairfield at this point. I don't think they're that bottom-tier team that I think that the three-man weave, like, predicted them as.
Yeah.
I know we mentioned there's, like, the bottom third tier is, like, all the same kind of, but...
Yeah, and I think a lot... I mean, a lot of these teams are just so close that they very well could finish that way if they don't, you know, play
they would change it around
better, but it's just so even. I don't know. I mean, it just always is, so... That's just kind of how it goes. But we still pretty much play everyone except for Monmouth or Marist. We pretty much still play everyone except Marist, right, again. So we control our own destiny, but we got Ryder on Friday, who is in last place of the MAC. But I see Frank online always say that they're a lot better than their record shows. I obviously have not watched Ryder play this year at all, but... Judging by what I've seen him tweet about them, it's definitely nothing to take lightly. And then we got Monmouth again the week after. So two apparent tough games that are going to be really important. Because if we lose these next two...
You're looking at the bottom of the conference.
Yeah. You're losing to, you know, a team that's below you already who probably will pass you with that. And then, you know, Monmouth who's a little further their lead at the top. From us, separate from us, so it's going to be an interesting ride, and you know, those are our last two away games before a very big home stretch. We got like I don't know five or six home games that are all within like a week or two apart, so it's going to be a very fun time for our show and just as a Stags fan. But I don't know, I'm interested to see how it goes. I really hope we beat Ryder this Friday, and then we'll worry about Monmouth next week. We're playing at Ryder. Just to give a quick background on them, like I said, I haven't really watched them play at all, but they are in last place of the MAC. I think ESPN has us down as underdogs.
Against Ryder?
Yeah.
No,
we're not. See, we're not red on there. They're red.
Yeah, we're black.
So we have a 61.8% chance to win, according to ESPN, which we hate.
Yeah, we do. Because
ESPN predictors
always wrong. They
are
actually favored semi-all, like, match predictor-wise. I think the past, like, I know Quinnipiac, I think pretty sure they were match predictor favored.
we hate the match predictor on ESPN, so we kind of don't like seeing the 61% chance. But basically, Ryder, they have played, let's see, they've played Iona, and they lost by a lot, 80-54. They played Marist, they lost by 12. They beat Marist by 4. They lost to Quinnipiac by 7, St. Peter's by 7. They lost to Quinnipiac and then Canisius. They lost to Canisius by 1 point. They beat Niagara most recently by 3 points. So, again, they've had some massive losses, like the Iona loss, losing to Marist by 12, stuff like that. But then they've also kept it close with teams like St. Peter's, who's in second. And, yeah, I guess just one of those things where you don't know what to expect going into it. Frank says they're better than they are. Trust his word. They did lose to Canisius recently, who we beat, and they only beat Niagara by 3. But, yeah, I'm on high alert going into this one because it's a very important game for us.
It's a big game, swing game.
Yeah, so we don't really know what's – I don't know what's the deal with Caleb. You said you just saw him like 20 minutes ago.
I saw him at the mailroom.
Saw him at the mailroom, so maybe he's getting some healing, yeah. Some healing cream,
some
right?
Some herbs.
Some deer antler spray or something to heal, like Ray Lewis. But, no, we hope he's back soon, but we don't know, right? So, I guess we'll keep running with this lineup that we had the last two games, the Cook-Mida lineup. So, I don't know, anything else you wanted to add for the show?
No, I think I'm good.
Yeah, we had a lot to cover. The women's team is doing phenomenal.
Yeah, they're
first place.
To latch on.
Yeah.
Get the bandwagon.
Yeah, we got to hop on the bandwagon. They played so well against Manhattan, who was second place in the MAC. They beat them by like 15. They should have beat them by like 40, but they had a little stretch of the game where they broke down. But they did have their first loss in the MAC this past weekend, I think against Siena. But then they beat Monmouth yesterday, so they're doing really well. And as things look, probably our best chance to get into the tournament this year, so might have to hop on the bandwagon. But other than that, one final thing to mention to the listeners out there is that Matt Turner might play this week in World Cup qualifying.
Oh, yeah, the other goalie got hurt.
So, yeah, so for USA soccer, Zach Steffen, who's the main starter, he got injured, back injuries or something, I don't know. But basically, USA plays in 2 or 3 World Cup qualifying games this week. They play Thursday or Friday this week. I think they play Thursday, Sunday, Wednesday, something like that. You can look it up for yourselves. But it looks like Matt Turner is going to start in those games. So for anyone who's interested in following his career, you can watch those games. They're pretty important for us for qualifying for the World Cup, which starts this year in the winter. So those are very important games, and it'll be nice to see him playing in very, very meaningful games. Finally, Matt Turner looks like he might be going to Europe. I know Arsenal bid on him, which is huge. You're a fan of Arsenal.
I'm a supporter.
That would be pretty cool for you if Turner goes there. That would just be massive for him in general.
I do love Aaron Ramsdale, but I would like Matt Turner on the team.
They're one of the – I mean, I know they haven't won anything in a while, and that's like a running joke in England, but they are one of the biggest teams in the world still. And for Turner to even get a bid, I don't know if he would necessarily – start regularly for them, to get bid on by a team like that,
big
deal.
A backup goalie always has to play at some point. It's like the backup quarterback.
Like, they usually play in like cup games and stuff like that. So it's like what Steffen does for Man City. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. But basically, it's a good time for Turner, and we'll keep updated on that, and we'll keep you guys updated. But I forgot to mention at the beginning, wanted to mention at the end, just because it's something to be proud of as a Stag. Watch the game Friday, Fairfield Ryder, and we'll be back next week doing shows regularly. We'll be 2 p.m. live on WVOF or anytime on streaming services. You might hear our audio quality get better because now we're taking a podcasting class.
Yeah, we're starting to become real.
So we
professional.
We now have to use some professional audio editing machines to put our podcast homework in, so we might actually do that with
the background
with this
noise
podcast as
be.
Well. Yeah, there might be no background noise, which would be awesome. We've never edited our podcast before, so yeah. Other than that, keep interacting with us on Twitter. It's been fun, and we'll be back next week. So we'll end the show off.